Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to podcast 43 for the Flight Test Podcast.
Almost up to 50.
Yeah.
That's like half of 100.
Well, I figure once we get to podcast 52, that will mean approximately we're doing it for a year.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That'd be crazy. Just real quick, guys, we wanted to let you know about two events we have coming up that we're going to. The first one is Maker Faire. That's going to be September 20th and 21st. We're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're going to be in the Make HQ.
Where is that located?
Oh, that's in Queens, New York City.
Queens, yeah.
It's at the New York Science Center.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what Maker Faire is, basically it's not just RC, it's pretty much anything. If you like building, DIY, making pretty much anything, you're going to have a really good time at this event.
It's called the largest show and tell on Earth.
Yes.
And so we're going to be in what they're calling the drone zone or the fly zone. We're going to be at the Make HQ Center, kind of answering people's questions, that sort of thing. We're going to be doing some demonstrations with some multi-rotors and some VTOLs and FPV and all kinds of fun stuff. So
it's going to be a good time.
If you're in the New York City-ish area, Maker Faire A will be an amazing time. Maybe you won't even have time to come see us. And B, we'd love to meet you guys if you want to come out to that event. The next event we're going to is going to be, is it E-Week or
E-Week, yeah.
E-Null or whatever it is. E-something.
E-Week. It's at Triple Tree Aerodrome. Basically, it's like the all-electric only Jonal. E-Null, I've heard it called, but that is the 24th to the 28th of this month. And I believe we're going to be there for all 4 days.
Yeah,
we're going to be arriving on the 24th. So yeah, if you're in that area, come out and hang out. We're going to be flying, we're going to be building, we're going to be crashing. It's going to be a good time.
So both of those events, Maker Faire, World Maker Faire New York, and E-Week, pretty much the whole crew is going to be there. So please come out and say hi to us.
Yep.
All right, guys, enjoy this one.
What are you doing to my dog?
You don't want to know.
I don't know if I want to know.
There's a camera involved. We can say that much.
Oh, man.
Is that Max making that noise? Good boy, Max.
Bark once if you're in trouble, Max.
What are you doing? Seriously, what are you doing to my dog?
He's set to go.
Bark
go.
Twice if you need help.
He's filming up your shorts right now.
No!
No.
Hi, Max. Oh, you're going to be a superstar, huh? This is for Papalepicus.
For those of you that can't tell, Max has a... what did we get him? It's a dog.
It's called the GoPro Fetch camera mount. GoPro and it's a Fetch. It's a camera mount that's... it's a harness that's made specifically for dogs.
We should share the story on how this happened. Alex.
Well, pretty much the way it went down is... I saw on Facebook that GoPro came out with this camera mount, and I said, hey, Josh, look at this camera mount for dogs. And I said, can we buy one? And he said, yes.
That's what happens when you have too many Mountain Dews and it's late at night.
You have to make a really serious face and act like we need it. That's what you need to do if you want to get something.
I think before you're done with the sentence, I was saying yes, because you ordered it like that minute.
Yes.
And then I forgot about it, and then it came in the mail. And next thing you know, Max
is walking around.
Yeah.
It's like a horse saddle, but instead of like a person riding, it's a GoPro mount.
Is it safe to say he loves it? I mean...
Max has some weird fixation with collars.
Yeah.
So he gets really depressed if you take his collar off. But then if you put the GoPro harness on, he gets really happy for some reason.
Very, very happy. And he's just sitting here just chill right now. He's never been this content. Normally he comes in, makes trouble, and then he leaves. But
we should just put the harness on him and leave the GoPro off. Be good for him.
So I think in the big picture, daily footage or footage from Max will probably be coming up.
Yeah, all in favor of a Max cam, just let us know and we'll make it happen.
I don't know about daily. maybe like weekly.
Weekly.
Bi-weekly, maybe.
Yeah. But, I can finally write him off on my taxes, so thank you guys.
We got to put him on payroll. He's working harder than most of us.
It's true.
Filming all day.
Dollar a week?
No, he's causing us to get behind because we had a meeting this morning, and I look over at Miss Lindsay, and Max is just like sprawled over her, and she's just like stroking his belly, and he's just sitting there, and he's distracting us.
Hey, at least he was in the meeting.
Yeah, he was.
He was there.
He was in the meeting.
So. Well, let's mention who's here real quick. I'm Austin Fury.
I'm Josh Bixler.
And I'm Peter Schiepel.
And I'm Alex Zavada.
Today, we are going to be talking about an episode idea that I got from the flight test forums. So we're going to be talking about how to repair your RC airplane and some different tips and techniques you can use because one thing that occurs a lot with RC airplanes is crashes. I don't know. Have we done a video episode on that before?
Oh, yeah.
Repairing RC plane.
We've done balsa wood repair techniques. We've done, remember the Angry Swordsman?
Could
easily be repaired. And there's a lot of really cool tricks out there. And I know Mr. Foam and Tape guy here next to me, he is an expert at restructuring his airframes.
And we recently crashed a carbon cub, so a lot of the techniques we're going to be talking about today.
You guys got to let that go.
Actually, is what might. Yeah. Yeah, I won't bring it up again, but I probably will.
I don't care.
We could talk about techniques of how to repair that. I think that would be cool.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we have three things today. We're going to talk about that. We have another segment from Fred Provost and Friends on the forum and the article section. I'll read the forum post here that I took the episode idea from. This is from Fighting 31 is his username. Can I put out a suggestion for how to maintain your equipment episode? It's not the most exciting topic, I know. It'd be great to head out and have a blast with your ready-to-fly aircraft, newbies like me. But what do you do after a few weeks when you get mud in a motor, crack open a foamy, and etc.? While this might be obvious to some basic info on keeping your gear in good condition would be really useful. As a frugal operator, Josh Bixler will have a few episodes worth of content, I'm sure, in his head. Manufacturers and retailers probably won't like this idea. Don't tell people how to fix your stuff. Just tell them to buy a new one. But it could be of interest. Thanks.
So, cheap is good.
I think that it'd be good to talk about some repair techniques.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, if you crash your airplane and it's sticking nose up in the ground and there's a bunch of dirt in your motor, what's some ways you can handle that?
Peter, correct me if I'm crazy here, but motors are generally waterproof, and distilled water,
mm-hmm. Yep,
pure water, on a squeezy bottle is really good. You can soften up. Now, if you're dry in the dry pack, mm-hmm. air pressure can do a lot of good, right?
Yeah. I would probably recommend just washing off completely. Just make sure you don't get it on your speed controller or things like that, because the speed controller hates water. And after you're done, get all the water off and then oil the bearings, because the bearings do not like water.
Yeah, most of our bearings are not like high quality.
Yeah, they're all cheap Chinese ones, and they're already bad out of the box. So, yeah, you know what to expect if you get them corroded.
Yeah, so water, if it's dry, I know my dad one time just nailed it into some real good dry pack dirt, and we literally just took some gentle air pressure and just blew it all out, and it was good as new. Mm-hmm. Water, just keep in mind, when you put water on something that's dry, you're making it muddy, so it's going to work down even further in. But rinsing things out is good. Distilled water is nice.
Taking the motor apart too if it's an expensive one, but for most cheap ones we probably don't care all that much.
Toothbrushes, soft bristle toothbrushes are really, really good for cleaning things like that as well too.
So what's the basics of taking a motor apart?
Generally on the very back of the motor, or the front, depending on where it is, you're going to have a little E-clip or some kind of keeper ring. Sometimes a keeper ring looks like two little holes and has like a, looks like a horseshoe.
Yeah, it's kind of referred to as a C-clip or an E-clip. If you Google the images, you'll see what they are and how they come off.
Yep. Some require a spreader tool, and you can still kind of cheat with a, treating it like an E-clip. Other ones, just like you said, are just a standard E-clip. That one, what is that one on the DJI motor?
That's a E-clip. Basically a really small flathead.
Yeah.
You can just kind of stick it in there and pop it off. But when you do this, stick it in a bag and then pop it off, because usually when you take these off, they go shooting across the room, never be found again. Along with reassembly. So use pliers for that too.
Very, very good point, man. And when you put it back together, get it on the groove. Don't try to just kind of put it there. Get in the groove by hand first. Don't kind of stick there. And then use your needle nose to
just pop them right in.
To pop it in. Now, there's also on the shaft, there's usually two Allen keys that will oftentimes lock it in. I don't think anyone really goes with one anymore, right?
I still see them on some on mode or some motors like that. But it's really up to the manufacturer, I guess.
Don't, if you loosen one and it's still really, really tight, don't just start banging on it, because there's a good chance there's a second one on the
other
side.
Always look for more of them. Never do that, because you'll screw up the motor if you do that.
Yeah, that's bad news.
You feel really dumb afterwards.
And banging a motor with a hammer is a bad idea, because you can knock your magnets loose. So you don't want to have to force it. If you have to press a new shaft in, it's nice to keep like a... use like a socket and
or a block or something. A rubber mallet's a good one too, because you don't use metal on metal. I mean, that goes against any machinist's
yep.
thing.
And if you got to press something in, if you take a socket and use the socket as a receiver, mm-hmm. That works out really good because it distributes the load all the way across the motor, which makes life real nice. Oftentimes you have to do that to switch from pusher to tractor configuration on older motors.
Yeah, to reverse the shaft around so you can use it with the collet style thing rather than the bolt-on.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, Peter, you probably get this because I know you answer a lot of our emails now. A lot of people, they see a motor and it has a shaft on one side, mm-hmm. but the way, say, it plugs into our swappables, that shaft...
Yeah, it won't fit because it's going through the firewall.
Especially with, like, Emacs stuff.
Yeah, Emacs.
Exactly. I don't know why they do that, but they just like doing it like that.
They do it so you could do a firewall mount where the motor's on the inside of the fuselage, mm-hmm. or you can put their adapter on with a threaded end on the opposite side. But when you do that, that's why we have the hole in our firewall.
Yeah, well, even, like the NTM motors from mm-hmm. Hobby King... if you buy those, you have to make sure you get the optional hardware kit.
Accessory pack, which,
yeah.
It's like $3. It's awesome, but...
Yeah, it'd be nice if it said... it'd be nice if it said, like, you need this, you know, if you're going to use it like a normal person.
Like any other human.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing that they wouldn't just include that. I'd rather have it every motor be like $3 extra and get this awesome little hardware pack. Yeah,
and that's probably why they do it, to make it seem like their prices are lower.
Yeah.
But yeah, just make sure that it comes, pay attention to the prop adapter. Also, bullet connector sizes. I know a lot of people don't like soldering, mm-hmm. And I was the same way when I first started. Just make sure, like, if you're going to do a build, make sure you get everything with, you know, the same size bullet connectors, 3.5.
Yeah.
Or just learn how to solder, because it's really good. It's a useful. It really helps.
Yeah, you're going to solder either way. If you're if you plan on sticking around for any time, you're going to learn to solder. It's a fact. You're mm-hmm. never going to avoid it. You're just going to run into issues if you just keep trying to run away.
Well, and taking away, once you learn how to competently solder, you're taking away a point of failure whenever you make that hardwired. And you don't get the flexibility of changing things over as easy. But say you have a crash and everything shifts inside your airframe, and then you put it back, it's not that bad. And suddenly now you have one of your wires loose, and then in midair with all that vibration, you then lose it. Well, now that you have two poles working, you're going to burn out your ESC. Mm-hmm. So, it can definitely domino. I know the immersion guys were really cool about pounding that into our heads, taking away points of failure.
Yeah.
And that was really useful.
Yeah, which I don't think that the immersion guys had any failures.
There's only that one weird one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where they lost signal, and that was because they were in a hurry to get the wing together, and the prop was out of balance, and it caused a vibration. The vibration actually caused the antenna to screw, and whoop, there goes
your video.
Yeah. Your video. So that was the only failure. And
as far as multi-rotors go, which have a lot of failure points, actually.
It was solid.
Yeah, those Zhugongs flew the whole time.
You know what? We haven't. I was hoping we could get I want to do a review on the Zhugong. Getting to see that in Switzerland in action.
Swiss Army knife of quadcopters.
The quality, too. We're kind of going off of the crash thing, but I want to get one of those in the shop as an official platform, you know, because it's phenomenal.
So when you crash an airplane, obviously, motor filling with mud is pretty common. Mm-hmm. What are some of the first things to go when you crash an airplane?
The front of it.
The front end.
The front.
So the tail's usually fine.
Tails are always great.
Also, check your batteries, too. Depending on where your battery is, like if you got screws sticking out of the firewall, on the impact, it might push the battery into the screws, busting the battery open, and you could have a fire. It may not be right away, but it could happen later on, so just be aware of that.
Mostly when it charges up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, be very... Yeah, if you smash up your battery, even if it doesn't get warm...
Just put it somewhere safe.
I would, dispose of it properly is what I would recommend.
Salt water.
Just know that if you smash up your battery, even if it's just like a corner that you smash in, just know that if you use that in the future, that's kind of a risk you're taking, so make sure to be aware of that.
A very good point.
Speaking of smash batteries, Peter and I went down to Ready Made RC, had a FPV fest, the first one, and we went down there, and it was pretty cool. It was like the first time I'd been at an event where they have like coordinated racing. They did line of sight racing with planes, and then FPV racing with quads and fixed wing, and we raced. It was a great time. And then shortly after that, I went to fly the Blackout, and I just like took off and went into like a pretty aggressive climb, like 3/4 throttle, got up to like 100 or 200 feet or something, and lost an ESC. And it pretty much just started doing barrel rolls. And I couldn't, like, I tried to pull out of it and I couldn't. And I just like, you know what, it's going down. So I just took my goggles off. I think I even had time to set my transmitter down, and I just watched it fall from the sky and hit flat on the concrete, and it just like exploded into a bunch of little carbon fiber bits and
doodad.
Electronics.
So now we know what happens to a blackout when it falls from 200 feet.
You said you broke the top carbon fiber piece, right?
Yeah, the blackout, the frame, the actual chassis itself is absolutely fine. I actually got really lucky. The top real thin plate of carbon fiber broke, which I think is like $10, $8 to replace. And then just the plastic screws, which I have tons of those.
I actually remembered I had an extra one at home. I brought it today.
No way.
Dead serious. Yeah, that was my moment of clarity.
So, yeah, like the flight controller. All in all, like the blackout frame is actually, it fared really, really well when anything else would have been demolished. However, almost all the electronics are ruined because it hit the ground so hard, knocked the magnets out of the motor. The ESC was either burnt or...
But that's probably why it crashed.
Yeah, the ESC or the motor. But all the motors have weird, like the bearings are broken.
Like the magnets are like knocked out of the epoxy spots.
Yeah, the video transmitter, the antenna broke off. The flight controller was broken in half.
How many video transmitters in the past just month have we knocked the antenna off?
The antenna needs to be reinforced.
Yeah. Oh my god!
With
golly.
Steel.
Well, in their defense, though, we've been doing some really crazy.
We do stupid stuff.
Crashes. I mean, it's not normal what we did to them.
When you're pushing the limits, whether it's to get a shot or to demonstrate something in an episode, you're just more likely to crash.
I wasn't doing either of those at the time.
Come on, Alex, I was trying to make you sound good.
But my favorite one, last week, we were helping Chad. There was a scene for, Rotor DR1.
Oh, yeah.
And they needed two to three multi-rotors flying by, so we got our little 250-size quads out. And we're flying. Well, Peter's was given a problem. It was your GoPro harness.
Yeah.
So Eric just decided...
Actually, it was the GoPro itself.
Oh, was it?
The USB pins fell out.
Oh, my god.
Yeah, the housing inside just fell in the GoPro. So luckily, I brought the warranty on that so I can take it back.
That's a good thing. But anyway, Eric ended up flying in line of sight. And just out of a fluke thing, Alex, you and I were pretty tight formation.
Mm-hmm. And we were flying FPV.
We were flying FPV, doing the laps around the area we were supposed to. And Eric came up, and he couldn't have tried to do this, but he just nailed me. he hit it so hard, and I'm flying, and I always have this bad luck where something fails on my multi-rotor. And I was like, what'd I do this time? And here it wasn't a failure. It was
You're just unlucky my when best it comes friend. To multi-rotors.
I crash a lot, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's most of the time, it's really not your fault. You just end up...
Not totally 100%, like only 90%.
It's totally your fault. You throttled up. You started flying.
No, I'm just not as awesome as Peter and Alex here.
No. You're joking. You should see what I did to the X-Hummer a day ago.
At the FPV Fest, I was racing, and they did it in heats of like three or four people. And me and Peter were in the same heat with Jeremiah from Stone Blue.
Oh, really?
And we were all... And then there was one other guy named John, who he ended up winning, but... We were racing around, and they had, like, these two big pylons, and then in between those, there was, like, two kind of, what do you call that?
Woggles?
Mm-hmm. Tunnel. It's like
like the gates or whatever.
It's like a waypoint you have to go in. It's like a bridge you have to go underneath it. And I was racing, and I missed the pylon, or I missed one of the tunnels right off the bat, so I had to go around and go through it again. And I ended up being in the back of the pack, and as I was catching up, I started going, and I noticed Peter was going the wrong way. I was, like, going through this pylon.
I don't know what was going on.
There
was
a
gate.
Quad that's just, like, right over the top of me.
That was
like,
close.
I'm like, Peter, is that you? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you're going the wrong way.
Okay.
Helping the competition. But it was fun. Racing is quite a bit of fun.
I hope with E-Week coming up that we're going to, it's 400 acres and it's not a huge event. I'm looking forward to exploring the woods, having some fun.
Hopefully they'll have golf cart rentals.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, if you're in the general, Georgia area.
South Carolina.
Yeah, that's right, South Carolina.
But that vicinity down there.
If you're in that vicinity, the southern area there, we're going to be at E-Week.
Yeah.
September 24th through something?
28th.
So come out and see us. We're actually going to be shooting some episodes there with the community, just kind of coming up with some more crazy ideas and just shooting some episodes.
We had an amazing time with that monster FT Flyer, and we want to do more episodes like that. And
That was at Flight Fest.
Yeah, at Flight Fest, yeah. So if you guys haven't seen them, I'm sure we'll be in the show notes. But we want to do that, and especially with winter coming up, we want to travel to you guys more and hopefully get away from the snow as much as possible. So this is kind of like our travel and to see how it goes. And I know it's really, really short notice to have people come up with ideas, but just come out and fellowship with us. I think also, Peter, I'm throwing you under the gun. Peter is instrumental on getting the Shinden figured out. So it's flying quite nicely. And we're going to hopefully be flying Shindens down there.
Mm-hmm. And shindin. For those of you who don't know what a shindin is,
Google.
Google it.
It's your best friend.
It's the final warbird.
A shindin is a Japanese warbird from World War II. I think they did fly some of them.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like they didn't get it out.
It was in 1945.
They didn't get it out in time. If they did.
Action.
Yeah. But yeah, the United States had a similar prototype called the XP-55. But it's cool. It's a canard pusher plane.
Pretty crazy looking thing.
It's pretty different from all the other swappables, which is we're trying to keep the variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We thought about doing some of the go-to Messerschmitts and, you know, all those FW-190s, but we decided to do something a little bit different.
Well, now looks like that's because of you. You were the one that found the shindin, right?
I didn't find it, but I knew about it.
You were the one that recommended it.
I wasn't the founder of the shindig. That'd be cool.
Here's the ironic thing is, I think you brought it up, and we were doing something where we were on a plane, and we started drawing the shindig on the plane, where when we got back, we actually, you know, printed it out and cut it out and stuff, and mm-hmm. had lots of problems making it fly. Well, you and I were again away, and Peter... took it off, and Austin shot footage.
Yeah, me and you were on the road, and I get a text from Austin, and it's Peter flying the shindig around.
Yeah.
we tried for 2 days to get that thing to fly.
Yeah.
I just went on the internet and looked at
existing models.
Actually,
to tell you the truth, 2 hours. We had frustration for 2 hours.
That's true.
Yeah. We went ahead and designed it over 2 days, but after it looked like it was just kind of hopeless. And, yeah.
We did two flights with it.
Yeah. And we're like, okay, you know what? Let's go to the Storch. So, it's like, I want to get this trainer out. But, you know, thanks to Peter, he put, bigger fins on it?
Yeah, just increased the vertical stabilizer size. Yep.
And it actually flies really amazing. Eric flew it. Peter's flying it. We're all flying it.
It's pretty fast. I think it might be
probably the fastest one.
We'll have to see.
Rocket motors.
Remember to bring that radar gun, too. E-week. Yeah.
Actually, we have from Eagle Tree a super duper...
Was it Eagle Tree?
Tell all things.
It's going to be a... it's called the Vector OSD. We're going to be doing an episode on that coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah. Is it OSD or GPS?
It's a flight controller and it's everything.
Who sent us that GPS speed thing?
Oh, that's the Voltron V3.
You're just making names up.
yes, that's the Eagle Vulture.
Wasn't that a cartoon
one?
It's the Megatron 25.
People are going to Google right now to Google that.
Actually, I'm going to double check that.
Yeah, please do that. Make sure it's nothing bad.
Yes, the Voltron V3 GPS data.
What was Voltron? Was some cartoon, wasn't it?
I don't know.
You mean Megatron?
No.
Voltron. Zoltron.
Zoltron? here, let me turn the max cam for you there. Here you go.
So, Alex, that blackout that you epically crashed, what's going to be the protocol for putting that back together? You killed basically all the electronics,
right?
Buy
a whole bunch of motors.
Yeah, basically rebuilding it. I don't know. I'll look at the motors, or actually, I'll have Peter look at the motors and see if any of them salvageable. It's kind of sad. Those are really nice motors.
T motors, huh?
Yeah. Well, they were the blackout motors, but I'm pretty sure those are T motors.
Yeah. For your 6-inch props.
6-inch props, but yeah, actually, I ran 6-inch props on the Sunny Skies, and they work fine.
Cool.
But yeah, basically, just put it back together, get that carbon fiber plate, and some nylon screws, and it's going to be back in the air.
Awesome.
And a new flight controller, new ESCs, new motor, new props.
It'll be good as new.
So when you fall from 200 feet onto concrete, you're basically making a new airplane.
Yeah, but the GoPro lived.
New grab.
Yeah, somehow the GoPro did not have a nick on it. I was so lucky.
And we don't put our GoPros in cases for whatever reason.
Because we have really good insurance from Best Buy.
That's true, yeah. We have great insurance. So
you know, Best Buy's going to cancel that insurance program.
It's costing them money.
As soon as somebody looks at that balance sheet, they're going to catch on. Be like, wait, what are we doing with GoPros?
Literally, probably about, I don't know, a month or two ago, we bought two GoPros because we were down to one GoPro and all of flight test, which is no good.
One working GoPro.
Yeah. And a week or so afterwards.
It was a rough week.
So something happened, and I tried to maiden a quadcopter with a GoPro on it, which is, if you're going to maiden something, don't put a GoPro on it. But anyways, I did that, and I had two of the motors plugged in wrong, and I tried to take off, and it did four backflips and landed straight on the GoPro and broke it. Took it to Best Buy with their accidental warranty, and they gave me a brand new one, no questions asked, $5. And
I couldn't believe that because last time it cost me $80. And I thought
typically
that was
it does, but for some reason maybe it was because it was within 2 weeks. Or
it could be.
I don't know. But
like, you know what? I pile drive it into the ground. That's cheaper, right?
And we are honest. I mean, we give them back the pieces. Like, I'm sorry.
I told them everything that happened, and the way they do it is like if you bring in a GoPro with no battery and no SD card, they literally open up a brand new GoPro, take out the battery, take out the SD card, and just give you whatever you give them. Mm. And typically, that time it cost me $5, but typically it costs $90. And
$85 or something,
and that's what actually renews your, it's not $90 for the replacement, it's $90 to renew your
your
insurance,
your warranty. Yeah.
And, so you have continued coverage,
and that is how you fix a GoPro. I have these squirrel moments and stuff. There are some cool things my dad taught me that was I've used all the time and stuff, and we can go over if you want with that. You know, everyone know what fabric softeners are?
Yeah.
They're awesome. Keep
little
some of that.
Dryer sheets.
Little dryer sheets. You got it. Keep some of that with you, because fabric softener, dryer sheets, and CA makes awesome like fiberglass. Yeah. So you can use that to rejoin things. Peter, you do a similar thing with coffee filters.
Oh yeah, the coffee filters and the water based polyacrylic.
Yeah, on foam on foam planes.
That's what my big airliner I did. That's like 8 feet long. That one is all coffee filters.
Wow.
All coffee filters.
So that you can use that to cover, like, say you have a break and stuff, you could use that on a foam airplane to cover the, you know, glue it back together, but then cover the joint. And
yeah, you can completely repair all the damage, like smash the nose and like hit it with a hammer or something, and then you can fill it most of it with the lightweight drywall spackle, and then you can sand it down till it looks nice, and you can put the filters over top and make it look like nothing's ever happened.
Wow, because those filters are so thin, they just kind of disappear, right?
And then you can just sand it down, you can do more layers, things like that. Nice. It just depends how much time and how much effort you want to put into it.
So awesome. Would that work for like a Depron or a foam airplane?
Yeah, it would work
to bridge
on that.
The gap in between, or that. Because I know that like kind of the great thing, you know, about a lot of airplanes these days is that they're made of foam. Mm-hmm. But also the bad thing about a lot of airplanes these days is that they're made of foam.
Made of foam.
So yeah, that's a great tip for repairing that.
As far as wood repair goes, if you have like say you bust your nose on your fuselage and everything, you can. On the inside, you can take thin wood and you go the opposite grain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pulling on the grain, not pulling the grain apart, if that makes sense. And you can kind of shear web and double up on the backside. And I think they even use that technique on full scale a little bit too, where they cross the grains over. Shear webbing and those kind of things are really, really powerful tools to regain your strength without having to put a ton of weight in there. More glue does not need more strength at all. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I'll just pound it full of glue, pound it full of stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a tight joint in there, you're done.
Yeah, if you're just relying on the glue to be your structure, you're probably going to have a bad time.
Second vibration comes along, it just shakes it apart. As far as also goes, I'm trying to think of some other cool tricks. Warm water on foam. Mm-hmm. You can.
Oh, yeah, the steaming. You can even use a covering iron and just a wet napkin. Just put the wet napkin on the like the wrinkled, fingernailed, dimpled foam spots. And put it like, I forgot the temperature, but it's steaming. You can kind of just steam the dents out of it. This works really well in Depron, too.
Awesome.
Doesn't work well on foam board, because foam board has got paper on it.
Yeah. I've never tried this, but I've seen other people do it or suggest it. But like, if you have a clean break, like say on the nose of your airplane, and you have like just like a regular foam airplane.
When you're saying clean, it doesn't mean lack of jaggedness. That's where it's jagged, but it's like two pieces.
Like it's two pieces that fit well together.
Yeah.
If you use like barbecue skewers to reinforce that, and then CA, would that work?
To be honest, if you have a really clean break, like say you're flying a Bixler or something, the whole nose just busts straight off and it cracks really clean. Or honestly, like the carbon cup. Mm-hmm. That is a really, really clean break.
Yeah, that nose is a really, really nice break.
You can actually just take glue and put the glue back in it, and as long as you push it in and let it thoroughly cure and dry, it's just as good as new. It'll
break somewhere else, usually. Yeah. Usually maybe like a few inches away from where it originally broke.
But what you're talking about with the skewers, what I oftentimes do is I'll coat it with like epoxy or hot glue, and then I'll drive those skewers in after I push the piece together and kind of pin it and then cut the ends off on it.
It's kind of like rebar and concrete.
Yeah, exactly. But I always put that in after it's lined up in the way I want it. Then I jab them in. If you try to get it on both sides perfectly, it'll be different. Hey, Mr. Foam and Tape, what about tape?
Oh, yeah, I use lots of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I usually try to make it look normal, like do a really, really nice tape application job rather than having the lines and seams bubble up everywhere. It looks really nice in some models. And I usually do this ahead of time. Like say, the Parkinson plane is like the leading edge of those wings. I'll take tape and laminate the leading edge and the leading edge of the elevator and rudder. It makes them last a lot longer, too, and it's completely unnoticeable.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Something they probably should have done early on.
Yeah, but you have to take your time when you apply the tape, because you do not get second chances. Because if you try to pull it off, you know the paint comes off, because the paint you use on that is like water slide decals.
So you're better off using, like if you have a little wrinkle, leave the wrinkle in there.
Leave the wrinkle. You have to forget about it.
Very cool.
Forget about the wrinkle. Mm-hmm.
Landing gear reinforcements. I know a lot of like Park Zone things have these crazy little four-prong
plastic things.
Yeah, and they're
with a weird rubbery glue.
Yeah, it's like silicone. Mm-hmm. You never notice that?
Yeah, the white stuff. Yeah, it's strange.
It's almost like RTV like silicone stuff. It's really crazy. But that there, I oftentimes just pick off all the silicone and I just put in some hot glue. But before I do, I'll scratch it up really good. Mm-hmm. I'll take a razor blade and kind of put little carvings in it, kind of make it burry, and then the hot glue will stick really well to it.
Nice.
Trying to think of what else.
Poke holes in the surfaces too.
Poke holes in the surfaces. Yep. Talk more about that. They're like,
What's that mean?
Oh yeah. In the where you can put the landing gear on the planes, like the parks and things. I took a toothpick and poked a bunch of holes into the foam, and then scratch and score the plastic up, and then stuck them together.
Gives them more cavities, right, for the foam to kind of force through.
Yeah, the glue gets like squirt all over.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out.
What else? Let's see. We got our tape. We got our skewers. We. Got a lot. You can fix a lot of birds with that.
And it's surprising fixing an airplane, like how well it'll fly even if the repair job doesn't look great.
Oh yeah.
Like you can get a lot of planes, are over designed so that you can really have some pretty serious things wrong with them and they'll still fly pretty good.
You know, a lot of people say, after I crashed it 3 or 4 times, it flies so much better. One of the funny truths about that is you are at a little bit more weight, a little bit more drag. But the other thing is once it starts getting damaged, your nervousness goes down. And when you're not nervous,
you don't feel that anymore.
You suddenly, fly better. And so that's kind of more the case than it starts flying better is your nerves go down. I do agree. Sometimes you get that extra little bit of weight, those extra couple of glue sticks, and life is better. But
also, that could hurt you, too. Because go light on the repairs. Try not to overdo it, because stronger is not always better. Because remember, all that mass you put up there, it's going to work against you when you slam into a concrete wall or something like that.
A lot of people ask, I designed a really great reinforcement for your power pod. And that's wonderful, but especially when you stop crashing. That's why we have those little discs now that you can make out of credit cards if you want. But I want the power pod to get destroyed and the firewall to break before that motor shaft bends. Yeah. I want that element to be broken because it's just, 50 cents in material.
Yeah, rather than, it's like $2 for the shaft, but, a whole week of waiting.
Oh, yeah. We could redesign the power pod firewall to go back and flange in there. And so it's really, really rigid. But now you're just transferring all that load to the rest of the airframe and your motor.
Because when you move the stress somewhere, it just goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're never going to get rid of it when you crash. You're just try to plan not to crash.
Define your plan.
Like, build to fly. Do not build to crash.
Well, and also, if someone's getting in the hobby, it's a lot easier to have a plane that's plain white. For your first airplane, don't go crazy. Put something on the wingtip to give you some orientation. But if you paint it up and make it look absolutely gorgeous, like so many wonderful, talented people do, you're too afraid to fly it. You don't want to hurt it. So start off, and I know in the flying ministry, a lot of guys, they go home after we did the build nights, and they would just do these amazing paint jobs on them. They're real artists, but then they were scared, and they would go the whole season with on the buddy cord because they didn't want to hurt their plane. So. Tape though, whenever you do have a break, you can get decorative with colored tape and put invasion stripes on a warbird, if you crack the wing off and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I like, kind of like try to hide the damage. You can just do that with a little bit of aesthetics and tape and things like that.
Yeah. No, very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we covered that topic pretty well.
Because we crash a lot.
I think like the suggestion implied that we could probably go on and on and on about that topic. Mm-hmm. But that's some basic things you can do. And like Josh mentioned, we do have the Balsa Repair video. I'll make sure I link to that in the show notes. You can check out the show notes by going to flighttest.com/podcast/episode43.
This is off the subject, but I know I want to hear people's opinion too. This winter, I want to do some episodes where I'm showing beginner Balsa techniques, like how to truss up a fuselage and stuff. Let me know what you guys want to know about Balsa, because foam is not the end of the journey. Foam is right now one of the easiest ways to get in the hobby, but I really want people to learn from all the amazing techniques of scratch building with Balsa too. It's really rewarding, and I'd love to start showing some of those elements in it.
Yeah,
so I'm allergic to balsa wood.
Are you allergic? Seriously?
It doesn't I think make I might actually be, though. No, I was coughing for months after building that cargo plane, because there's a lot of balsa in there, and the dust was just ridiculous, especially because I worked on a hobby shop and I built a plane.
Yeah, dust is ridiculously fine. You're right about that. You got to wear a respirator, friend.
Because I do have asthma. But she said balsa wood, I might be allergic to that stuff.
After not living in my house anymore.
Judging by your reaction to cats, I would think that's a distinct possibility. Well, let's transition into our segment, just kind of bringing everybody up to speed on what's going on in the forums and the articles. Fred Provost and Ryan Papp, Patrick Murphy, and Crafty Dan all kind of hopped in together for an audio segment. So we're going to go ahead and play that. And keep in mind that actually today's topic was taken straight from the forums. This was in the show's suggestions and viewer requests section. So our main topic today was lifted right from the forums. So if you have a suggestion for a topic you want to hear in the podcast, just put in that section of the forums podcast dash, you know, your suggestion for the title, and I check those pretty regularly. So if you have an idea, feel free to leave us one. So let's go ahead and play that segment now.
All right.
All right. Well, I'd like to start this off by saying that this is a few of the guys from the flight test forums getting together. We're just going to maybe start doing a small podcast segment that can be inserted into the other shows. My name is Fred Prost. I'm Flying Monkey on the forums. We also have Patrick with us.
Hey.
And Dan.
Crafty Dan on the forums. Hey, guys.
And also Ryan.
Hey, Crash Recovery coming to you.
And just to kind of get us into this, each one of the guys will give you a little bit of history about themselves. We'll start with Patrick or Earthside Teach.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm a science teacher. I teach high school physics and physical science, and I've been into RC for about 4 years now. Started with a little Hobby Zone Super Cub, which I still have in fly because it's awesome. I don't know. It's aviation has kind of been my thing all my life, and that's my story.
How about Dan?
Hey, I'm an electrical engineer work on programming embedded software into radios, and always been really big into fabrication as a hobby and making things, building things, putting it together. And the weirder the techniques, the better. And for a while, I was playing around with card models, models made out of cardstock. And one of my buddies at work basically said, why don't you put a motor on it and fly it? And invited me to CEF, and I was hooked. Saw a couple of videos from Flight Test and was hooked with that too. So I'm having a lot of fun with that for probably about a year and a half now.
And how about Ryan?
Basically, I've been a firefighter, EMT, I don't want to say professionally, but I've been doing it, getting paid for it for about like the last 18 years. Been in RC flight for like about the last two. Was looking for something to get into with my son and ended up looking for some just ideas on flight planes and so forth, and end up, of course, like everyone else does, find them on Flight Test and on YouTube, and just been hooked ever since. And just look where it's got me now. I get to know Flying Monkey.
I'm sorry about that.
It's a blessing and a curse, some would say. So we talked about maybe each of us pulling a thread or an article that we found on the forum or on the articles page and talk about that a little bit. So, Dan, we'll start with you. What was your thread or article that you found?
Okay, the thread that I found is it was titled Pure Genius, and it goes over a video some lady posted up who's using foam board to make fabric templates for making clothing, but she's using a sewing machine to cut out the pieces themselves, and it's just a genius idea. I can't wait to get a hold of my wife's machine and do weird things to it. it looks like a great way to make nice clean edges on the foam board. And there's even one of the guys on there was suggesting playing around with getting the needle depth just right so you can go with the score cuts as well. But it looks like a neat thing to do.
So I will add this note that I did when I was reading that thread. They did specify you need to ask permission before taking the use of someone else's sewing machine for this.
Sure. I'll make sure I get that.
Patrick, did you get a chance to look at the sewing machine article, the sewing machine thread?
No, I didn't look at it, but I'm kind of really interested to see how it works. I mean, I think I kind of have an idea in my head of what it's doing, but definitely something I want to check out. I don't own a sewing machine, and neither does my wife, so I'm kind of out of luck there. But it's really a clever idea, I think.
Yeah, the beauty of it, though, is you don't really need a working sewing machine so long as just the needle goes up and down.
Well, I just picked up a pencil in my hand, and I'm stabbing the foam board.
Yeah, that would work.
It's kind of fun.
Ryan, have you had a chance to see this thread?
Yeah, I've seen it. And like Dan said, as long as the needle goes up and down and the little pusher feet thing in the bottom works, it's awesome. I mean, the simplicity of it is kind of mind-boggling.
So the beauty of that is even if your wife won't let you use her sewing machine, you might be able to pick one up secondhand at a thrift shop or off from Craigslist.
Yeah, there's a lot of machines that are just junked because they don't feed the cares. Thread's not in the machine when you're using it.
You know what? I wonder if hand stitchers would work.
Oh, that's a cute idea. I wonder, too. Yeah.
Because then you could just slide it down along the design instead of trying to feed it, so you wouldn't have to add another thing to your workbench to get in the way, to have to move around. This is a little thing you can just throw in the drawer and you wouldn't have to worry about it to handle it.
Y'all are talking about things I don't even know exist. What's a little hand stitcher thing?
You don't watch enough infomercials.
You're right. I'm always in my basement.
They have these little handheld sewing machines that you would basically be able to cut the outside of the pattern a little bit rough, and then it would reach over in and use it as a more final device.
Aha.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, you need to post that suggestion, because somebody's bound to have one of those in the back drawer and give it a try, because that would be cool if that worked.
Yeah, I'd have to see. I mean, I'd love to try that. I just don't know where I'd keep it as it is. Everything's all piled up at the moment downstairs in my little work area.
If you use that if you start using it regularly, it always will stay on top of the pile.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick, did you have a thread or an article that you found interesting?
Yeah, I kind of went way back to August of 2013, August of 2013. That would be 8th month of the year, where Joker 53150, Jeff Crisbaum, he put together a thread contest that he was involved with. It's a build contest that Model Airplane News did, where you take kind of a core balsa airplane design, but then you finish it off in whatever style you want. So basically the kit comes as a low wing generic airplane, and you can finish it in any style you want. And Jeff went with the Navion, the Ryan Navion, which I've always really liked those planes, and you don't see a whole lot of them. And what he ended up with was something really beautiful, and it even made an appearance in the magazine. It's a really good balsa build if you want to go through and check that out.
Yeah, I did kind of look at it a little bit, and I skimmed over the article a little too quick, and I missed the fact that they're all using the same core system, and that the different models that they have, they look so different as finals that I didn't realize they were all the same kit originally. So, Ryan, you had a chance to look over the Navion thread that Patrick had mentioned. What stood out to you?
Well, besides the guy putting in retracts on this thing, but some of the little tricks he did, like using the soda bottle with the sandpaper on it to create, you know, the perfect sand on for the, you know, the openings and so forth, is just ingenious.
Dan, did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I saw it while he's posting it up, and that's a gorgeous build. But pretty much all of his builds have been that way. With the Red Swan build that he's done like three of them, and the third one is he's kit bashing into an entirely different aircraft. He's a prolific builder and does a really good job.
Ryan, did you have a thread or an article or a series that you're interested in?
As being a noob of a pilot and design type thing that I am, I found Jason Alexander's 7-part series on how to do SketchUp planes was great. He starts you out, and I think he builds a Cub in it, But he starts you out from the very beginning, showing you how to get the picture in, to the very end where you take the components you made and get them into a PDF format so you can print them out. And I've done a couple planes that way. None of them I've finished, you know, building and flying, but I've made little versions, and it's really quite easy. So I think he's planning to finish it up with a couple more little tips and tricks on it. But for someone starting out to want to learn how to maybe build a Piper Cub or maybe do a profile Zero or Mustang or something like that, it's a really great way to do that.
Dan, I feel kind of funny asking you if you've seen this thread or that thread, because I know you've seen one every single post that's on the forum. Did you? What was your
not
impression?
Not all of them, but I've seen most of them. Yeah, I did see that one go by, and Jace does a very thorough job. I'm kind of in the same camp with Pat, because I sketch up and I just don't get along. But if anyone can explain it, he can, and he's done a very thorough job end-to-end on it. And his videos themselves are fairly good, fairly interesting.
The great thing about Sketchup is it's free. And if you don't have any if you don't have any experience coming into it using any kind of drafting software, you will pick it up really quickly and do well with it. I'm just damaged.
And I came in. I haven't used any of the software, so this is a video series I'm probably going to have to take a look at to start doing some of my own designs.
It's really, really simple, Fred. I mean, you saw when I started playing with it how you guys I kept dropping designs right, doing this, doing that, and if I had a question, I shot him a PM or caught him on Facebook, and he sent me here, try this, try that, and it was absolutely incredible how fast everything came together. I haven't played with a while since that computer I had it on kind of took a dump on me, and my tablet won't run it because it's just a basic Surface. But otherwise, it's a great little program. I loved it.
Well, it sounds like everyone agrees that it's a good program for someone that's just starting out, trying to get into designing their own airplanes. I'll have to give Jason's articles a look through, and anybody listen to this, go on through and check out the different topics that was discussed tonight. Dan, Patrick, Ryan, I appreciate you guys helping out with this podcast. If the flight test community enjoyed what we did, come on by, check on the threads, on the forums. Let us know that you'd like to hear more from us, and we'd be glad to get back together.
All right, guys, thanks for putting together that segment. I'm excited to play more of those in the show, and I enjoy listening to them. So
it's kind of humbling to see how much more talent we have in the community.
It's great. It's great to point out kind of those highlights and stuff, because I know that not everybody has time to go through every article. So it's nice to get the highlights.
Well, I feel bad because I feel like in a long time we've kind of overlooked how amazing the forum is. You know, we've talked about rating the articles and checking, and the articles are awesome. But the forum is where I think the community really shines. Their talent shines on the article, but their hearts shine in the forum. So
definitely,
you know, it's definitely a place to go and check it out.
Well, let's hop into some voicemails here.
All right.
We ready to play some voicemails?
Yeah, go for it.
Let's do it.
Hey, Peter. It's Patrick Murphy from Dallas Town, Pennsylvania. I saw the video that you had made with the airliners you had built on YouTube a while back, and I was wondering if there were any plans to do an airliner build like that on Flight Test, and if not, I am putting in a request for one, because that video was awesome. Hey man, glad to have you with Flight Test, and keep up the good work.
Nice.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. I really appreciate that. Unfortunately, did you mean the foamy profile airliner? Because I might be able to do some with that. There are currently no plans out there for that right now. That plane's long gone and been destroyed,
actually.
We can
change that, though.
Yeah. It's a profile, though.
I think he's talking as far as, like, episode.
The really big one.
Yeah. Doing, like, something in the future, obviously.
I hope to do one eventually.
You said your really big airline is, like, it needs pretty much new everything.
Yeah, the retracts are busted out. I made an off-way airport landing. The battery just took a dump. And it landed, and I was trying to go up a slope at a 45-degree angle, and the plane just plowed into that. I went to look at it, I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. I walked up to the landing gear, just fell off. The motor mounts are still attached, the nose is still attached.
That was cool. Maybe we can post that video in the show notes, because that thing was
huge.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. Huge, it had lights, it had the nice...
It was very skillistic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
I love the taxi cool. out to the runway too.
I hope to build another one actually even bigger.
I think to answer your question, eventually, I think definitely we can do that. Right now, I think beforehand, Peter still has his giant cargo plane up and operational. We haven't transported it yet to the shop.
You gonna bring that to E-Week?
I might try. Wait, no.
I don't know how we're gonna do that.
You guys are killing me.
It's coming up pretty quick.
Only other but five other things.
We're definitely going to be doing an episode or multiple episodes with that thing. Mm-hmm.
And I think probably the cargo plane's probably first in line, and then who knows, maybe.
Because it still flies.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it's awesome.
So, now all right, you guys jinxed it. We're going to see that thing crash.
No, never. All right, next voicemail.
Hey, guys. It's Ryan Papp, Crash Recovery. I got one question for Peter. What are you going to do with that gigantic FT flyer we left you guys? Make it epic.
Let's see how long it can fly while it's on fire.
And then we can use the water plane to try to put it out.
There you go.
Hey, Josh, is there anything left of it in your garage?
Oh, my. Well, that's why it's in my garage.
It's being preserved.
Yeah, right after, because you guys saw in the tour of the FT headquarters where planes go to die. The fact is we could stick it on the ceiling of our FT headquarters. We bump on our heads on it every time we walk past it. So it is currently up against the wall in my garage, and it takes up about a third of my garage wall.
It's in the archives.
Yeah, so it's safe and sound and perfect condition, and I'm treasuring it. And then someday when we have our destination location,
yes,
it'll be hanging proudly there.
It's tough thing that we're really working on getting better at is that we have episodes like, for example, the Storch episode, which is a fairly recent one. Mm-hmm. I think from that episode, there was, five Storches, and there's one of them left.
You guys destroyed all of them.
They've all been destroyed.
My pretty planes.
Because they're so much fun to fly, so we have a hard time stopping, flying things. And even, the giant FT Cruiser, the giant Spitfire, they're both gone, and we want to save those things for when the destination location becomes a reality, because we want to have stuff to put on display.
Yeah, they're on the internet. They'll live there forever.
The Cruiser is, the sad thing about that is I took off for one flight on Flight Fest, and that was its retirement flight, and I was so happy to get it back in one piece. And it's like, oh my gosh, we're going to have this for Flight Fest or our FT headquarters someday. And I was excited. Then that storm came through.
Yeah.
And just nailed it with water. And it's still in one piece, but it'll never fly again. I bet you we'll just reconstruct it.
You have to build another one.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah, we want to start preserving these planes. And as far as I'm concerned, maybe looking back, I don't want to insult anyone, but I think that was officially our first FT community episode. Mm-hmm. And I want to do a lot more, so it's really special. But we'll make it epic, but we'll still try to have something to say from it.
Yeah. Hey guys, this is Dan Lennox from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Just wanted to take a quick minute to just really thank you guys for all the hard work and all the effort that you guys put into your videos and all the information that's on your website about getting into the hobby. It's just so nice, someone who's not really connected to a particular club or group and doesn't really have any connections to anyone in the area that knows about the hobby. It's just really nice to have that resource. You guys are so friendly, so open, and really well-informed, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I just purchased my first plane recently, and I've been loving flying it around. Hopefully, one day I'll be able to purchase a kit maybe and go that way, but I just wanted to thank you guys and encourage you, keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, Dan. Thank you. That's awesome.
Truly touches us, and honestly, just man, having you in the community, having the family, is the most important thing to us. A lot of people talking about making purchases, you support us by being here, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you are the reason we're here, so thanks for joining the community. We're happy to have you be a part of it.
Hi, Flight Test. It's Matt from Lancaster, PA. First of all, I just want to say how much I love the show and the podcast and everything you guys do for the hobby. Recently, I purchased an ElectroHub kit from you guys, and it came within less than a week. I was really happy with the shipping. I also ordered a ready-to-fly quads electronics kit. And I was a little bit disappointed that it took 2.5 weeks just to get here. So I had the frame and everything, but the electronics took 2.5 weeks to get to me. And I ordered it within an hour of you guys putting everything up. So maybe you could look into helping them out with their service. It would be nice. Thanks.
Oh man, well, thank you, and I'm sorry at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, we've
been. I'll let you talk about this because I know you talk to Paul a lot.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him recently, but Paul is a very busy guy. I know that he just went full time with Ready to Fly Quads, and he had a full time job other than that. So I know that he's working really hard. I do respect the fact that he's taking it out of stock when he's out of stock, and this is not a problem that we've only experienced with Ready to Fly Quads. A lot of people who are electronics retailers, big or small, a lot of them have trouble keeping up with the demand for some of the electronics for some of our, you know, our airframes, which is really humbling. It's really humbling, and it is a good problem. Unfortunately, you guys are the ones that suffer from having to wait for it. But we're working really, really hard on working with other companies, because the more the better, the more people that are supplying electronics kits for our airframe kits.
The quads and the planes.
Quads and planes, yeah, the better it's going to go. So right now, Laser Toys is still doing kits, right?
Yeah, Laser Toys is doing
Laser
kits.
Laser Toys, and, Altitude Hobbies.
They're not selling our airframes.
No. So I'm just speaking on electronics kits. So Laser Toys, Altitude Hobbies, Grayson Hobbies, I think, still has the Viggen EDF kit.
And actually, Altitude is selling some of our kits.
Oh, cool.
Now, so they do have a few of those in stock. So.
And we're working with a small handful of other people to try to get them all the information they need to start selling kits. And it's a slow process, and we're learning. And we really appreciate your patience.
Yeah, with success comes logistics, and some people aren't 100% prepared for that, but we appreciate your patience.
And I remember just when we started with the store, you know, the community was so gracious in giving us. I mean, some of our packages took almost 2 weeks to get.
Yeah,
because it would
be the three pack.
Yeah, the three pack was
couple products. We've been there.
Yeah, and everyone was gracious. I do know. Was it Paul that sent you the picture of that pallet of ESCs? I mean, he didn't just say, okay, well, next time I'll order it, and just order just enough. He definitely went big. So hopefully, this logistical thing won't be much longer, and if it does last longer, then we'll take action to find other people. But I don't think it's going to come to that. Paul has a good heart, and I think he's really striving to do great.
Mm-hmm. Yep, valid comment. Okay, next question.
I keep getting my planes stuck in trees. What do you guys use to get them down?
A retrieval tool.
Chainsaws.
That's a great voicemail. Eight solid seconds.
That's one of my favorite voicemails.
I like that. Oh my gosh, a slingshot with a wiffle ball and a
Tannerite,
string.
Tannerite, C4, really you know, things that explode.
Fishing pole with a lead weight.
Yeah.
Lots and lots
of quadcopter with a hook on it.
Oh, Peter, tell them how you... My kids have a knack for getting planes on top of off a roof.
Oh, this also reminds me of my brother too.
How did you get the one plane off the roof with your quad?
I took the Mini X Pro, which is like a 250 size quad. It's kind of like the Blackout. We took a string to it, tied it to the copter, and I just flew the copter up there on the roof and landed ahead of it. So we just dragged the string and the copter like ahead of the plane, so the plane would fall off before the copter did. And that's exactly how it worked. The plane fell off, and I still had like an inch to go, and took off the copter from there and bring it back and brought it back down.
One time, didn't you even use the down thrust from the
to blow the radiant off?
Blow it down, yeah.
I also got my brother's plane out of a tree. He was about 50 feet up in a really, really, really tall tree. So I flew up a smaller rope with the Mini X Pro, got over the branch, and just shut the throttle off and let it drop. And we just took the two ends of the rope to haul a bigger rope up, and then we just jumped up and down that rope till it fell out of the tree.
That's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. So you dropped your Mini X Pro to recover?
Yeah. The Mini X Pro is fine, though, because the rope just, you know, snagged and it slowed right down. I just grabbed
That's
it.
That's hysterical. It's like, all right, I'm above the target. Mm-hmm.
I took a small quad home from work to practice flying. I got it stuck in my neighbor's pine tree. And so I used a stepladder. It was like a 6-foot stepladder. And then I taped 2 8-foot 2x4s together because it's the only thing I could find that was really long.
You think you have muscles, huh?
And then reached it up and poked it until it fell out. So
wow.
Golf ball retrieval things work well, too.
Potato guns.
Why do they make those golf ball retrieval things? Is it for lakes or what is it for?
Yeah, for lakes. I'm pretty sure. Or like, I don't know, if you hit a ball into an alligator den. Actually, just a fun fact, this has nothing to do with anything, but if you put a golf ball in that and launch it like a catapult, it literally goes like a half mile. Like it's like a 30-foot catapult, and you just... I made it when I was little. I learned that by mistake by lodging a golf ball halfway across our neighborhood.
I've never tried this, but something that sounds reasonable would be those tree trimmers things with the extendable pole.
Oh yeah, just cut the branch down.
Well, or that.
They have some chainsaw attachments for this.
Or put tape around the actual cutting part and just use it to grab the plane, so you don't cut the plane up.
I like that.
But I don't know. I never tried it, but
we used a spud gun in a certain episode, and I know it got.
You guys aimed at the plane. You're supposed to aim for the branches. Huh? Well, luckily I wasn't there.
We blew the wing off.
I'm pretty sure you guys were aiming to do that.
This is actually where the beginning of this episode comes in play. Here's with repairs.
Yeah, here's the behind the scenes look on that. That plane actually to get it in the it was so badly damaged. It would only turn one direction, and Chad is like, Josh, I need you to land it in that tree there. So what I was doing is I was constantly doing just lazy circles, and you could almost go straight or turn, but that was it. And you had to use throttle to get altitude. It was so banged up.
Was that the Hobby King Cessna?
It wasn't the Cessna. We had that at the very end of it as a joke, and that was also another plane that was completely destroyed. Terrible. We just put the wing in there, and there was no fuselage because it actually lawn darted, but we had it looking like it was complete, but it was all that. But that I put the Bixler in there. We would never blow apart a good Bixler. It's against my religion. We use a spud gun to get evil, but that plane was literally...
What about a Bix?
Bixler, they're all great. Why do you have to like call me out like that?
That was just a bad joke.
Yeah, that's bad. The Bix. So we actually ordered that. People want us to do a review, and we have three on order.
Is it here yet?
Oh, no.
We've been on order for like a month.
Almost a month now.
Good job, Hobby King.
We'll get them sometime, I'm sure.
I look forward. You know what, though? What I saw video-wise, it looks amazing.
I like the wheel pants.
The wheel pants are good. And I love how the little nose, you can put the little board camera in there and the hard points on it. I mean, Hobby King really did an exceptional job on this one. So
they just had a little typo with the name, though. They forgot the L-E-R.
I wonder why they have a good line with the Bixler. It doesn't have to do anything with me. It's kind of weird that they would change to go from Bixler to Bix. But as long as it's an awesome plane, who cares? Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll review it. We'll find out.
Yeah, there you go. I bet you we're going to like it.
All right, next question.
Hi, Richard from the UK again. Huge thanks for the Sukhoi review and playing my previous voicemail. Because of where I live in North Yorkshire, 54 degrees north and basically on an island, I would like some advice on wind flying, 10 to 25 miles per hour. What aircraft design features are helpful? What makes a good wind flyer? Why do some people chop the wingtips off Bixlers? Are flying wings the best choice? And could we have 6 tips on how to fly gusting variable winds? Thanks again, and love what you are doing.
Good questions.
We gotta break this apart. As far let's just go around table here. If you have a really gusty, windy day, Peter, what plane are you picking?
Something that's fairly fast with the higher wing loading. Usually small to medium works pretty big. Like things like a giant carbon cub, as you saw in the episode, don't do too well when you try to do stupid stuff with them.
When it's gusty cross.
But yeah, like a Parkland Striker, what else is good? You know, wings, jets, things like that.
Yeah, the wings are nice because the airflow is affecting, when you have a gust of wind, it affects the whole entire wing at one time.
There's not a lot of side area, too, with that.
Correct, yeah. And as far as why people are cutting the wingtips off Bixlers, I don't know. I think they need help there.
They go faster.
Yeah, make them go faster a little bit. There's a lot of mods I think some people have, and you know, it's perceived to be better. I've had wrecked Bixlers that lost their wingtips, and we flew them afterwards, and they flew just fine. Mm-hmm. But the stock Bixlers, you know, were still, you could hop them up pretty good, too. What Peter said, high wing loading, flying wings are great. The Storch, I was honestly really shocked with how well the Storch handled wind. I don't think it's honestly an optimal.
Yeah, mine started flying backwards.
Yeah, it'll fly backwards. You can still penetrate if you have a big enough motor, but something that the airflow, when it hits the whole airframe, you know, it doesn't cause it to stall or change its characteristics. And I think because the Storch could fly so slow, it was happy to do
that. Yeah, I've also flown a lot on beaches, too, where it's gusting.
Yeah.
Or it's constant, 10 to 25 knots, possibly.
Yeah.
I was at Atlantic Beach once, and I almost broke the Tidewater wing in half walking it out to the beach. Oh, it was blowing so bad. I mean, I couldn't stop the motor or anything.
That's pretty bad.
And I took off against my better judgment, and it took 75 to 100% just to make headwind. It was probably the stupidest thing I've ever done. It's also like getting sandblasted because all the wind blowing the sand off the beach onto your legs and into the motor. Somehow I brought the thing around.
Unreal.
Does sound like a bad idea.
Yeah.
There's also, if you have any kind of slopes or hills, slope soaring, or even powered gliders with stuff with little drag. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you have some pretty steady wind, like at the top of Stone Mountain, something like that could work really well.
Yeah, anything. As long as it's like a really steady wind, you can pretty much use any airframe because you know what to expect. It's the gusting part that really throws people off.
Well, and I know it's probably wrong, but I'd rather fly a slightly nose-heavy plane in windy conditions than a slightly tail-heavy.
Yeah, because you can underspin easier with the tail-heavy plane. You'll be miles out by the time you recover, depending on what it is and how you're flying it.
So, yeah, make it heavy. Put a bigger battery in maybe than normal if you can get it over the CG and make it balance properly. But I'm a wing guy. I like wings.
Nice. Well, I feel like we covered that pretty well.
Didn't he have a whole bunch of questions?
He had a whole bunch.
We forgot.
We have a lot of questions, but I don't know how many much more. Well, we'll take one more. Mm-hmm. And
he had some questions.
Yeah, he had six.
He wanted six tips for flying in the wind.
Oh, okay. We kind of covered a lot of those.
Yeah, we
heavy wing load, low side force. Yeah. You know, airframes, slightly nose heavy or good CG.
I think there was tips for flying in the wind.
Oh, different. You know, I like expos, high expos in the wind because
especially when coming from landing.
When you're flying directly in a real strong wind, that high expo will give you that softer touch.
Yeah.
But then when you're flying with the wind, you can go really extreme on your control. So
also
so
try to read what the plane's doing too ahead of time because you'll notice it'll bump up and down and just anticipate what it's going to do.
Yep.
Because that'll help you get down for landings. Because I landed in some really bad wind sometimes with some turbulence coming off of structures.
Keep the plane upwind too, or into the wind. If you get downwind, I always tell people when we used to teach them, when it goes past you, so you're facing, you know, the into the wind, when it gets behind you, that's out of your playground, and that's where the bullies live because, you know, once you're there, you got to fight back. So I always tell people the second it gets to where, you know, it's going to be behind you, that's your ground zero. You cannot let it go any further past you. From that point on, you're just trying to get ahead of you again. You don't try to fly it downwind because one mistake, you're down, even further.
I figured that out with the microradian. I went for like a half mile walk.
Yeah. And it's so deceiving because it's like, oh, I think I'm going to back. If you're, 100 feet away and you can put it down safely, just walk the 100 feet. Don't try to battle it.
With the AS3X, it actually flies pretty decent in like 10 mile an hour wind. And so I went up to my parents' place and was flying it around. And like, it just kind of got away from me a little bit. And then the battery was starting to croak. And so I went for a walk.
That's all she wrote. All right, next question.
Yeah, let's play one more and we'll call quits for today.
All right.
Hey, are you guys going to be doing any new speed builds, swappables, and could you preview them, like a hint of what you guys are going to be making speed builds?
Yeah, let's just give them a couple of them.
give them a quick preview.
Yeah, good question, buddy. Thank you. The Shindin is going to be reality. That'll be our final Warbird. We also have the mod kit for the P-82, and I'm not sure when that'll be released, but that was actually drawn a long time, but it's kind of cheating to call that a Warbird. So.
P-82 is the twin fuselage P-51 Mustang. So it's like two Mustangs in one.
That's actually existed as long as the P-51 has, but it just didn't seem right to release that so quickly. So we'll release as a mod kit. But the Shindin will definitely be coming out. And then also Peter's awesome cargo plane that he designed how many years ago?
7-8 years ago, back in high school.
Yeah. And if you guys on RC groups, there's a huge, how many pages that you probably know better than
somewhere around 300 pages in there now. I have no idea how long. Like it's been running for forever.
25 posts per page. You guys do the math.
It's a lot of pages.
It's a lot of pages, but he was gracious enough to let me draw it into laser format and transfer it over to make it foldable. So Peter, thank you for that, but that'll be coming out sometime this winter.
Oh, thank you for that, because I get to crash more often. I hated building them things. It took me like a whole day to build one of them.
It's, you know, it's addictive. My kids absolutely love the twin, and it's probably one of the most gratifying builds because you fold a couple folds and it's just huge. You know, it's very, very substantial in size and performance, but the rest of the stuff we can leave a little bit to mystery. We're
going to be having some stuff specifically for indoor season.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Too. If you like race quad motors and 10 gram motors from your crash wreckages, save them. Don't sell them.
Keep it vague.
Keep it vague. How's that?
All right. Cool.
Guys,
if you want to interact with us on the show and leave us a voicemail, you can go to speakpipe.com/flighttest. If you would be so kind as to give us some feedback in iTunes, you can go to flighttest.com/iTunes. And we thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that GoPro still rolling on the dog?
He is sound asleep.
Sleeping.
Totally asleep on his side.
We're catching great GoPro footage of Max asleep.
That's how he is most of the day, unless you take off his collar. So he's twitching right now. I wonder if we can do this. Ready? There he goes.
You got to do it on the left.
All right, folks. Have a great day.
All right, see you guys. See ya. Thanks.